here we go.
I'm Mo. And the other three guys around the room here, we're going to get them to introduce themselves there by doing their best epic movie announcer voice while describing or while introducing themselves there. So the man whose name starts with a B.
In a world where Brett was the hero, Brett was available. Saving the world!
That's all you got, really? That's All right, no problems. Keith?
In a world where full of bad comics, one man can save you.
Now, that I liked.
There you go.
Chris?
That's my dream job, actually. That was good.
You're really good at that.
Be the movie
in
trailer.
A world. When I do, I sound like Clint Eastwood. In a world where your man, tell me, did you see two? Did I throw a fire five bullets or six? Tell you the truth, I really don't know. See, I can't do it. But you did it well. Chris?
In a world where comics rule, this man... I'm as good as you, Mo. And you know what? That's not saying much.
In a world full of raptors.
All right. Well, in that world, we got the weekly news with Cub Reporter K. Tons of news this week, of course. So I'm sure you got gonna fill us all in on it. But first off, we're gonna just cut to another friend of ours who's gonna tell us about our sponsor, Comicosity.
Thinking. Yeah, Macho Man here. And space is the place, but so is Comicosity. Yeah. Jake Roberts ruined my wedding. Atomicosity made my day. Yeah, dig it! Oh, yeah!
Your second shot at Clint Eastwood there was much better.
You like it? Randy's a big fan of Comicosity. Anyways, wow. Keith, go ahead.
That worries me, actually.
I'm run by two of the machoest men in comics.
That's how I think of them.
All right. Well, it is a lighter week in news after our news heavy episode after New York Comic Con. So just a couple of highlights to hit. We do now have confirmation of how Miracle Man will be published. The January solicits show that it will be starting from the Warrior stories, which is the very first of Miracle Man. So actually starting before number one. And there are two issues solicited in January, so let's assume that they will continue double issues, which will put sometime around middle of 2015, we'll see the new issues by Gaiman, if it keeps that schedule. And the big question we had last week of will Mr. Moore's name appear on the book, because it was not in the announcements. The solicits are credited to the original writer. Exact words drawn the solicit. Apparently his name cannot be used to promote this book.
Yeah, I love Alan Moore. There's a new biography of him also out. We'll just mention Lance Parkin is the writer of it, the author of it. It's called Magic Words, The Extraordinary Life of Alan Moore. So I believe I'm getting that for Keith as a Christmas gift.
I'd be fascinated to read it.
As long as it's not written by Moore, then he's okay.
I was riveted by like the 10 pages I made of Grant Morrison's book before I could not take his ego anymore. So I'd be really into someone else telling Alan Moore's story.
Hey, at least I'm sure it'll have, you know, sentences and stuff. Warren Ellis's book really didn't.
Was it a pop-up book or what? What are you?
No, it was random bits of porn. Transcribed. It was really not very good at all.
How did I miss this? I'm the target audience for that. How did I?
Is that his second book?
No, the first. Crooked Little Vein, I think it's called.
He must have read a very different version.
Doesn't sound like a biography.
I really didn't like it.
Doesn't sound like the book I read. All right.
Totally doesn't sound like.
Hey, what else we got in the big news this week?
Moving right along, Comixology, they did a recent survey, and one of the things that I think should be highlighted is that when Comixology started up, their first survey showed 5% of Comixology users were women. That number is now 20%.
Awesome. That's great news.
And Their profile of their average female reader is 17 to 26, college educated, lives in the suburbs, new to comics, and may never have picked up a print comic.
Well,
that's great so news.
As far as you know, is digital bringing in new audiences? That certainly shows some great growth. Some sad news for, I know there's fans of this book on the podcast. February issue number 36, Daredevil, is canceled.
Well, no, it's not canceled. It's ending.
It's ending. We haven't gotten an announcement of whether there's a new Marvel Now Daredevil to be following this up. We don't know whether it will continue to be Wade and Sammy. All is in the air. We do know that Elektra is coming around that time.
Yeah,
they may be relaunching together.
It seems to be the speculation is that this always been building to end at that point. Anyways, it's exactly 3 years. So,
yeah, I think the trial teaser is probably the relaunch.
Yeah, no, so it's ending. It's about number 60 in sales. It's outselling some Marvels. Obviously, they keep going outselling some of the 3D cover variants from DC. So it's not sales wise as being ended. It must be a creative decision, I think.
Or a change of creative team.
Possibly, yeah.
That they've been doing quite a bit of that. Mm-hmm. As a new team takes over, relaunching books. What else do we have here? Well, speaking of endings, Vibe and Katana are done in December from DC.
Neither one. Color me shocked. Wow.
Neither no surprise. Yeah.
They shouldn't have been started, let alone, you know, I just don't even know why they
and also,
why they put them out.
Also, while we're talking about cancellations, then we might as well say that Marvel is taking taking our theme, our tagline from our Wii Views, where we say we're saving you from bad comics because issue 12 will be the last issue of Fearless Defenders. So they're saving everybody from that piece of crap.
That's also good, though. That's another one that really shouldn't have gone anywhere.
What else we got?
Green Team will also end in January. So kind of clearing the path here for DC to have a wave to come around the end of Forever Evil.
Green Team actually survived another 3 issues more than I expected it to, given its numbers.
8 seems to be kind of their magic number. It's pretty rare that they do less than 8. It's a goodly amount for a trade paperback. That's kind of what they seem to be structuring it around.
It's better when they do sometimes the 9, and then you get a trade of the 8, and there's always that one floppy issue out there.
They've really been trying not to do that. I don't think they've had that.
It's happened several times to me over the years. So
I don't think it's happened since the New 52. I think they're going kind of out of their way to collect up those books complete, including changing solicit material. When the first wave stuff, they had announced stuff at 6 issues, and when they decided to cancel stuff at 8, they redid the solicits to be 8-issue books. So they've actually repackaged them to make sure there aren't those scattered issues that they used to have a lot of.
Okay, tons of news to get to. Come on, let's go.
All right, and just a couple of quick Comics Tribe notes here. Comics Tribe announced several new books coming in 2014. A comedy horror about cats and zombies called Cuddlers. A book called The Wailing Blade, which is dystopic sci-fi. And we're getting a mini-series of Oxymoron called The Loveliest Nightmare. All coming to us next year from our pals at Comic Strip.
Okay, I love those guys. They're good guys. I really hope that those books don't take 2 to 3 years to ship.
I will look forward to them in 2018.
Because they're great guys, yeah. No, I mean, that's been hopefully that issue, and they'll get everything else out. Anything else?
All right, and that's the news.
Well, not quite. Let's see. Pretty Deadly and Velvet both sold 57,000 copies today. And sold out, going immediately to a second issue. We'll be giving in the Wii Views section, we'll be talking a little bit more than these books, but I think that's showing the strength of a continuing to grow comic book industry. It appears that the Beware the Batman, issue number one, and that came out today. It appears that that's already been pulled from the Cartoon Network until 2014. Marvel or DC has some launch a Scribblenauts variants in January. Let's see what else we have here. Charles Soule, of course, we talked quite a bit about him last week. He had a couple books. He's going to be taking over on She-Hulk. Stan Lee Media has lost its appeal in their fight to for Conan the Barbarian. So, you know, they've been attempting to gain that property and the rights to the property and have failed. This is multiple times now, unfortunately for them, and probably fortunately for people who enjoy the books that are in coming from Dark Horse, though the one this week, I don't see anybody's enjoying that. Sir Ben Kingsley is another project he's going to be doing after Iron Man 3, and he's going to be doing something else for Marvel, though it has not been announced what it is yet, but there's some intrigue there. Wolfman Superboy is the star of these villainous son of Superman and Lois Lane. I don't know what to say there, Keith. What do you think?
Sorry, I didn't even understand the last thing you said.
Wolfman Superboy is to star the villainous son of Superman and Lois Lane.
Oh, yes. Well, this has come out as a rumor that they'll be killing off the current Superboy and replacing him with the alternate future version of Clark and Lois's son, which may or may not tie into the possible time travel stuff that will happen next year in DC.
Superboy time travel. We're not opening this. I know, it
sounds like gold, doesn't it?
No. It's Wolfman. At least I trust Wolfman to some degree. Moving on here, huge spoilers from Iron Man have come out and leaked in the Associated Press. His origin has been retconned. It's been leaked in the Associated Press where this is done on purpose, as it appears to these things are now being done from Marvel and DC or not. It's difficult to ascertain. Should I give the spoilers here?
You mean the comic Iron Man?
Yes.
Well, they just finished the secret origin of
issue 17.
Tony Stark.
Well, issue 17, it will say that he was adopted. And that he has a brother, Arno. Tony
and Iron Man of 2020.
That was the Iron Man of 2020.
Yeah. Tony and Maria Stark's natural son, who was imbued with alien technology, proffered from the rogue android 451, who has been hidden away from the world, laden with unknown abilities and perhaps powers. Tony Stark is not the son of... Wow. The Kirby Estate, latest lawsuit against Marvel, has again failed. Let me see. I'm only mentioning this quickly, but the new Deadpool series is called Night of the Living Deadpool. I'm only mentioning it because that is awesome. Awesome title. Kevin Smith writing another comic book series for DC. This time, Kevin Smith is going to ruin Batman after ruining every other book that he's ever written. Outside of Clerks, he will now ruin Batman for us in a miniseries. Chris, what do you think?
Well, the first two times he ruined Batman, I didn't get upset, so I'm not getting sad at this kind of time.
The trailer for Captain America 2 Winter Soldier is out and available. You can reach that online. Chris Hemsworth says Ragnarok will be the plot for Thor number 3. I think that's about it. Dynamite Entertainment and the Independents has announced that they'll have Little Battlestar coming up among their Little Vampy or Vampirella, Little Bionic Kids. So they're obviously running a theme month there. Little Ernie.
We hit that last week.
So.
You were able to source that from our last episode?
Oh, is that on there? Okay. Uh-huh. Well, okay, so that's one.
You said you weren't at all interested.
There was two. There was a couple of things that you've doubled up here.
Oh, was there? Well,
yeah.
All right. Anyways, what else?
And I actually intentionally don't do any stories on reprints because I think they're garbage stories. And I'll tell you why. All it means is
you're doing Miracle Man.
Stores are second prints. Stores are unable to predict their sales so badly that they need to reorder on the day of. That's why books sell out.
Yeah.
Image can't afford to overprint. Stores are still unable to predict their sales. to that level.
Okay.
So that's why they sell out and they order more. And that's why we go to second prints. It doesn't mean anything. Every number one from Image for 2 years has gone to second print.
Okay, wait. 57,000 copies is a higher print run than what they've been doing on the majority of their number ones.
And they were still wrong.
They're still wrong, exactly.
And they were burnable books. Of course people are going to overorder.
Keith,
but we get second print on like Saga 12.
You're missing the bigger point. Is that it's showing a momentum for the industry. It's a positive sign. It's a positive sign. 57,000 copies now of these independent books from Image are selling out on day one. This is a positive sign. This is showing again that the industry is trending in the right direction in pop culture and continuity, and interest in comic book stores is not being hurt, and it's a good thing.
The better thing is if they had 70,000 copies of that first print and everyone got it today. That would be better.
That would be better. That would be better. But hey, it's a start. All right. Anyways, so there we go. That is everything else. And Chris, you came up with this week's topic. What is it? I have a mini topic, by the way. Should we do that first or do that second?
Let's do the mini topic. I can't wait to hear what it is.
All right. I got a mini topic here because the 75 most iconic – let me see. I get the 75 most memorable moments in DC Comics history. Really good article. It's published on Comic Book Resources. Comics should be good. Really nice. They set up a bunch of options for people to vote on, and then after that they let people write in some votes and let the readers of the visitors to the website vote on it. So some of these are really, really interesting. For instance, the first one is a moment from, you know, like the 75th one is a moment from Batman, I think 249 or something. These people really, the people voting here, really have a better knowledge of comic books than I do. I'm just going to quickly read off the top 10 to you guys, then you guys can give me your opinion on it. And I'll ask you guys if there's any moments that you consider most memorable that aren't in these top 10 to kind of go for you. So number 10 is Bane breaks Batman's back. Try saying that three times quick. Go ahead, Keith. Bane breaks
Batman's back. Bane breaks – no, I can't.
Yeah. Batman 497 by Doug Munch and Jim Aparo. Number 9 is The One Punch. But Keith Gibbon, J.M. DeMatteis, Kevin McGuire, and Al Jordan – of Batman punching out Guy Gardner.
One of my favorite moments of all time, man.
Number 8, Jason Todd, nearly beaten to death by the Joker in Batman 427 by Jim Starlin and Jim Aparo. Number 7, Green Arrow's Ward is a Junkie. Green Lantern number 85 by Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams.
Better cover than comic book.
It's a great cover. Actually, no, it's
amazing.
I think it's a great comic too, personally. But
at the Comic Book Art Museum in San Francisco, I saw the original art for that cover.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a Green Lantern. It was a Green Lantern exhibit.
That would be sweet.
Yeah, it was really cool. Oversized art too.
Ozymandias. How do you guys pronounce Ozymandias? Ozymandias. How do you guys? Ozymandias.
I try not to.
Ozymandias, how do you pronounce it, Brent? Ozymandias, Diaz.
Ozymandias. Yeah.
Ozymandias is what I was.
Ozymandias. All right. Well, his plan goes into effect in Watchmen number 11 is number 6. Number 5, Death of Supergirl from Crisis on Infinite Earth number 7, by Wolfman Perez and Giordano and Ordway. Number 4. Baby Superman speeds away from his dying home planet in a rocket ship. Action Comics number 1 by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster is number 4. Number 3, Barry Allen makes the ultimate sacrifice to save the multiverse. Crisis on Infinite Earths number 8. I've forgotten that death happens so shortly after Supergirl's death. Like, talk about just laying it on. Like, this is heavy stuff. So that's interesting. Number 2, Superman Dies. Superman volume number 2, number 75 by Jurgens and Breeding. And number 1, Joker Shoots Barbara Gordon. Batman the Killing Joke by Alan Moore and Brian Bolland. Thoughts on the list, guys, and any that you guys can think of for you that are most memorable or iconic moments for DC?
I think one of them missing is Spider-Man's black costume, Secret Wars number 7, no, 8.
Spider-Man? DC. DC.
Sorry.
DC.
DC.
These are DC moments.
But a hell of a moment.
Absolutely.
You know what? If DC had published that, I would have it at number one.
I think probably something with the Golden Age and Silver Age Flash is needed. That issue of Flash.
Well,
I say 123.
It's not in the top 10, but I mean, Superman, number 25, sure, Superman races the Flash.
Yeah.
For instance.
I'm sure that any moment we think of is going to be somewhere on the list. I mean, I don't know if, like, I wouldn't have put Death of Flash in the top 10, right? Like, story wise, it's important, but I'm trying to picture the moment in my head and I can't remember the panel.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Death of Superman, I would have put as number one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, when I thought of it, I totally expected Death of Superman to be number one.
The reveal of Shadowhawk?
You're thinking of Wild Dog. The reveal of Wild Dog. Where was that on the list?
Oddly enough, it meant about as much as the reveal of Shadowhawk.
Oh my god. Yeah. No, it's an excellent list. I suggest guys check it out. I'll just mention a couple moments that I love. Everybody loves Batman punching Guy Gardner. I love Hal Jordan punching Batman. That was one of my favorite moments ever. So that's up there for me. And I can't believe this isn't in the top 10. You know, the destruction of Coast City. I can't believe that's not a top 10 moment. That was shocking. And maybe it's held by the fact that DC's Green Lantern at the time sales were really low and it only had about 40,000 copies, I think, printed.
Coast City got better.
And Coast City eventually got better. But those are definitely a couple that are up there for me. A couple, Hal Jordan ones. And I love Kingdom Come. I love Superman being hit by the magic lightning of Shazam. That to me is up there too. Those are some of my favorite moments. So. Or I think most memorable moments. So, all right. Any others, guys, or are we moving on?
No, let's move on. I do have a mini topic as well that I could throw in here.
No, do it. Do it right now.
A question from our pal Mayhem Comics.
Oh, yeah.
Came out a couple weeks ago, and we never got to it.
I forgot.
What is the current age of comics called, and when did it start?
Well, in order to answer this question for me, Keith, let's look back and say, what were the current ages and when did they start? So the golden age, I guess, was the birth of Superman and Action Comics in 1939. Is that correct?
38.
Okay.
Silver Age starts with Showcase number 4, the introduction of the Silver Age Flash.
Yeah, Barry Allen. So, and what year was that? 1960? About 1960? Or?
No, 58.
Okay, 1958. Okay. And then what's the next age? Is it until...
Bronze.
Bronze starts somewhere in the 70s. Does anyone remember what they kind of mark it from?
Yeah, I don't know where to mark it from, that's for sure.
Bronze Age actually started in the 80s with the publishing of The Dark Knight.
I thought the Bronze Age, and this shows kind of the problem with this one, I thought the Bronze Age actually started in the 80s when Crisis... ended and Superman and Batman relaunched with the new DC.
Well, going to the Wikipedia.
The wiki?
The wiki. Bronze Age of Comics, 1970 to 1985.
Whoa.
So it actually ends with Dark Knight.
Okay, so it ends with Dark Knight. So then 1985, what was that age called? Is that known as the modern age? Is that correct?
Just call it the modern age. I'm looking to see if there's a link to that. Yeah, the modern age, which is just listed as 85 to present. So basically, it'd be.
I don't think that's accurate.
Crisis, and well, Dark Knight was what year? Crisis was 85.
89, I think.
Crisis was 85. Yeah, Superman relaunched in 86, didn't it? With the Man of Steel miniseries. And to me, that's where I kind of think of the modern age as having started. But, I mean. I think the new 52 launched a new age. I think, in fact, when you look at most of these, that's one thing I can say about the power of DC. While I think the current product is very poor, I can definitely say that the current age of that all these ages are launched is done through a major event from DC.
Well, that's fair. And actually, I mean, these ages are all based on relaunch times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I had to point out to someone the other day on the Twitter, the Silver Age was a relaunch.
Mm-hmm.
It was 5 years before they retconned that the Golden Age characters existed on a different world. For 5 years, they just didn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the Silver Age DC characters, Flash, Green Lantern, they were all taking the names, reintroducing brand new characters that had no relation to the previous continuity.
You know, and especially since that after shortly within, you know, just about a year's time, after the New 52, you know, Marvel reboots, soft reboots. But that's still significant and a response to the New 52. What would we call it? I don't know. Does Platinum Age sound too stupid?
Too confusing.
Yeah.
Is Digital Age redundant? I mean, to me... I mean, not only did the impact of what DC did with the New 52 and the excitement that that created, but with the New 52, they went same-day digital.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Marvel followed suit soon after. Everyone else kind of fell in line pretty quickly. And it was also, you know, once everything shook out, everyone's realized that same-day digital did not destroy the comic shop. So, I mean, it is kind of the digital age. I don't know if you want to call it that way.
Yeah, I don't know if
it's the age of Larfleas.
I think when you look at something like digital age or tech age, none of these sound quite right, you know. They just don't. Digital age is accurate. I don't know that it has the right ring to it, though. Historically, if it will have the right ring.
Because the other thing we have from 85 to current is
the tin age
comic stores.
Yeah,
oh, I mean, that's we aluminum have
comic stores. I mean, what does come after bronze? Participation.
For Canadian listeners.
It's a Canadian listener joke.
We just need to do it in like a badge system or something like that. You know, this is like your yellow badge.
I don't know what else kind of. Besides digital, what else kind of represents this age? It's a real tough one. I mean, like I say, I think, you know, it's not the Iron Age. It's not the Steel Age. These don't sound right. You could go with something like Emerald, maybe. Diamond.
But when we were reading in the Bronze Age, we didn't call it the Bronze Age of comics.
Maybe
I
that's
think we
true.
Have to wait
Actually,
some
I think
time.
It, I think it was.
For,
I think it was pretty quick, Chris, so that it was referred to as the Modern Age. I think that happened pretty fast.
Yeah, but that's how safe is the is calling something the Modern Age? I mean, technically the Modern Age needs to be renamed so that the current age can become the new Modern Age.
Okay, if we're to do that, then what would we rename the Modern Age to?
I think I call it the Plastic Age.
I think there's something to that.
I think there's the observations we made a lot that the biggest change that happened in comics in our lifetime is that people started keeping them.
Mm-hmm.
And the comic bag is the defining moment of. It puts a cap on the value of any comic produced in our lifetime that had any kind of distribution, because fewer of them are destroyed. You know, the reason Action Comics number one is worth so much, it's not just because it is so important in for comics and
so
for
rare
culture. There's like 80 of them or something.
Yeah.
In any kind of condition.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. I think when you look at things like, you know, variant covers and gimmick covers and that type of thing. I think Plastic Age kind of sums that up very well.
Let's class it up a little bit here. The Mylar Age. sounds much better than plastic.
You could call it like something like the Crystal Age, but no, I like that. I like that. I kind of like calling it the Plastic Age. I mean, I wish I could come up with something better, I agree, but not Mylar. No. All right, maybe we should move on to the big subject of the week. Chris, it's your subject, so you explain it.
today we're just talking about things that, even from a comic book reader's point of view, are just dumb. Weird comic book science that's never been explained really well. It's just stuff, as a comic reader, we accept and move on. Stuff like Flash's ring. Okay, it has his whole costume in there.
I can't believe I didn't think of that.
That's like... how can Green Lantern breathe in space?
Oh, that one he has the...
Yeah. It's stupid, man. Well, that whole explanation is pretty freaking stupid.
Ah, no, I got no problem with that one.
Just stuff that, you know, when you approach a non-comic book reader with comic books saying, you know, this story card's awesome, and they'll derail you with a stupid question, and you just have to go, yeah, we just ignore that little bit. Yeah, Rhino's costume is just attached to him. That's all there is to it. I don't know how he poops. Just really stupid stuff.
Nobody would ask you about Rhino.
Every title has these little things that we just let it slide.
So I can't even tell you right now. Remember, I mean, say what you will about Kevin Smith. Remember, though, Kevin Smith...
totally knew you were going to go there.
Yeah, Mallrats talking to Stan Lee, asking him all the questions about, like, you know, Mr. Fantastic's penis and stuff. I mean, like, it's, you know... It's true that I have thought of these things and went, that doesn't make sense. Stan Lee, though, had an answer for everything.
Well, then I guess we need to get Stan Lee on the show.
Don't do it,
we?
Brett. Do it. You're in charge of that.
Oh, great. Thanks. All right. Well,
don't let us down, Brett.
He'll be on the show before our 1,000th episode.
Actually, just because I mentioned Flash's ring, does anyone know the current explanation on how his costume fits in his little ring? Is it a multi-dimensional thing?
Does it still exist in his current?
I actually don't know. I mean, the classic reason was not actually that. It was that he, at super speed, folded it.
Oh, you're into a small package. You're kidding. You are.
No, that was the classic explanation.
That's unreal.
That's wicked. I like that. I mean,
they got rid of that whole thing when it was the modern age, when it became Wally West. I mean, I don't recall him having the ring. It was a Barry Allen thing.
No, I think he still had the ring.
He got the ring. It wasn't right at reintroduction. I just always thought it was a little weird. The one character that you can explain, well, he just nipped off around the corner to change you into his costume, you didn't use that explanation. Everyone else has to carry a little backpack with them with, like, the Spider-Man costume or something. Flash, you know, he can run home at any time and change. Let's give him the magic ring with his costume in it.
I don't know. I can't give... It's a great one. The Rhino one and him pooping, I assume there's a flap. But...
Captain America's shield... used to fit under a jacket.
That's yes. True.
It at times fit into, when they tried to be more realistic with it, it fit into an artist's
portfolio,
which, you know, I guess would have to be like 5 inches thick. I've never seen an artist's portfolio that was 5 inches thick, because you were carrying everything you had ever drawn.
I think it was Peter Porker, the Amazing Spider-Man? Or Spider-Ham, Peter Porker, the Amazing Spider-Man, the very original one had, I think it was Captain America or something like that. And they made fun of that. They pointed that out. Because it was one of the jokes was how it was a round shield, and he put it on, and he had the most square, triangular shape. And Peter Parker's like, how do you do that? And anyways, yeah. So
it makes so much more sense to be the windshield of his motorcycle.
Exactly.
Did you see that link I sent you, Brett? That
Reb totally Brown's
got a new film coming out?
Totally done. Yep. Reb Brown. Woo!
Classic Captain America.
Life is going to be good.
Oh, you mean on Blu-ray? Yeah, I was there yesterday. I saw it.
No. Reb Brown is continuing to act.
Oh, okay. Okay. You mean because, yeah, the DVD of it was the Blu-ray was an HMV yesterday. I'm like, man, people are going to be disappointed when they stick that one in and realize what they bought.
But really, because it's Christmas, the exact presents. Same title. Uh-huh, right here.
Exact same title.
I have it on DVD, and I have to say, since it was shot on video, I don't know how how much upgraded the Blu-ray could be.
Oh, come awesome. On.
If it's got a commentary by Reb Brown, then you would not be able to keep me away from it.
I'll never forget when he showed up on the Jay Leno on Tonight Show hosting, when he was like guest hosting for Johnny, and that was like one, like his second guest or something like that. And he was really proud, and everyone was like, "You're in Captain America, it's great." And they were asking him how big a movie it was, and he kind of went, it's, you know, it's big, it's great." It was awesome. All right, we're getting way off topic. If we're going to talk about Captain America's shield, I just got to say the whole thing about him throwing it and it bouncing back. It's not rubber. It is metal. Metal don't bounce like that. I know it's vibranium. I know that crap. It's still crap. It's still stupid.
It's made of vibranium.
Yeah,
it's which still absorbs stupid. Impact, which means no. It should never bounce off anything. It should, even more if it so. Absorbs impact, it should just hit things and stop.
Stop. It bounces back and he can bounce
that
it off.
Scene in the Avengers finally makes sense. When Thor's hammer hits him, I always thought he should be squashed.
Spoiler alert.
Problem with that scene in Avengers is that Thor doesn't know what his shield is made of, so he's trying to kill him.
Oh, man. No, it's all right. The dumbest thing when it flies. That's one of mine. That's the Captain America shield can hit 47 walls, 23 villains, and bounce right back into his hand like it's remote controlled.
But I have cool. one.
Keith All right. Has one.
Oh. Hmm?
I thought Chris Keith was add one, but no. Oh, go ahead. Whoever.
Rest, go.
Okay. Well, I want to know about Wolverine with the claws. Now, it's one thing to say that he has the claws, but when he retracts the claws, how can he even possibly move his wrist?
They go all the way to his forearms.
They go all the way into his forearms.
Yeah. They go past. Wow. This was in the Marvel Handbook, dude. You studied this.
Well, certainly not that well. But
there was a cross section that showed you that they slide all the way back short of his wrist. So they sit between his wrist.
That's a load of crap, because I have seen those things when they're sheathed, and there's times when it's almost as long as his whole arm. And there's no way that's popping back in and staying knotted unless it folds at the elbow. There is no way.
I'm okay with the claws. It's Wolverine swimming that drives me up the wall.
Oh, man.
His bones are made out of metal. How does this man not sink?
According to that same Marvel handbook, he's 5'4", 300 pounds. A totally acceptable weight. He's not so heavy. He's only 300 pounds. Remember, it's only laced with adamantium. It's not full adamantium. It's only laced with it. It's a light coating of an invulnerable steel.
We don't know the weight of that invulnerable steel.
No. He's 300 pounds, according to that book. He was 5'4", 300 pounds. And while we're at it, I just got to say, when he had the metal ripped off of him, and then the first time the claws came out on bone, I went, come on now. I thought
that was cool. I love that entire Larry Hammond story arc.
But I do question then how he didn't wind up breaking the bones every time he tried to slash them.
Oh, they always said they were very tough bones.
Oh,
well, he did break them several times.
Uh-huh. And they healed because he had magical healing powers.
I have some that are all team related.
Oh, yeah?
teams are one of my pet peeves overall in comics, the Avengersification of Marvel, being one of those key things. People being over-teamed. So the period where Spider-Man was on the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, doing solo stuff, and holding down a full-time job.
Wait a second, Spider-Man's on the Avengers? Don't you mean on the Justice League, right, Chris?
He should have been in Justice League. And at the same time, when you're on a team and you don't call anywhere for help when you have a solo story going, Captain America's constantly getting into shit and never thinks, you know, I do have this team of 187 other superheroes that all live in a 4-block radius of me. Maybe I should phone one of them.
He's trying to assert his independence.
But they're always like destroying the world kind of stories. And like they never just phone up like Thor.
Yeah, you know what?
full-time job.
There is absolutely not a single policeman in the entire planet in any country that pulls up, and the first thing they do when they go out to investigate is tell the dispatch where they are and ask the dispatch for backup.
That's right.
But really, if you live in the Marvel Universe, wouldn't you just nuke New York City because absolutely everything bad happens there, pretty much?
Oh, God, no. I'd move to San Diego. That's come up as like one of the joke things that for years is just commit crimes in other cities.
Well, no, but that, don't you realize if Scarlet Spider didn't prove to us anything, if you go someplace else, crime will just follow?
And the other one is underpowered teammates. People on the team, like
Captain
Wasp, America. Where she's just like wearing a skin tight outfit and she's got little zappy things. Like Iron Man's on the same team. Iron Man makes like 14 extra Iron Man armors. And everyone's set up.
You know what? I never thought about that, but you're right. Why doesn't Iron Man just go, look, Captain America, you're great, but how about this? Then you still have all your abilities and an Iron Man suit. Makes no sense.
Didn't they try that at one point? They put in Captain America.
Yeah, it was called Iron Avengers. Everyone looked the same, so it sort of sucked.
Yeah, the only challenge is that it looks ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's totally logical.
And Captain America can't move anywhere nearly as well as he does, does without armor.
Hey, Hawkeye, what would you prefer? Being able to shoot an explosive arrow or be able to blow up an entire mountain with your Iron Man suit?
No, Hawkeye just wants to go and do his laundry.
And meet dogs. Take those strays.
That's my stuff on teams. Who's got us something else?
Oh, yeah, man, you know what I think is really ridiculous every single time I see it? And everybody loves the Batman. But and there's a lot you could do with the Batman. Let's face it, there's a lot. But the one that gets me, I understand Spider-Man swinging through the city, proportionate speed and strength of a spider. But Batman swinging through the city like he's Tarzan, and he's still a person without powers. Give me a bike, give me a bat plane, all this stuff. I understand, like if I look at my downtown, I go, nobody can swing from anything on here. I realize that his Gotham City has a lot more gargoyles to get a hold of. But honest to God, human beings just can't swing like that across buildings because you're human beings. You would fall, you would whatever. It's every single time I see Batman swinging instead of using some other mode of transportation, totally takes me out of the book because I think that's stupid and completely illogical.
I got one that relates, actually. The Batmobile. You know what? You may think swinging through the city is stupid, but Batman constantly, when he's wanted by the police, is driving around in the Batmobile. He gets out, he fights crime, does his little thing. At no time does a cop say, hey, look, there's the Batmobile parked over there illegally. I'm just going to wait for the owner.
No, I'm just going to give it a ticket. That's all I do. Mark the tires. Mark the tires. Warn him.
Yeah, he's going to put the...
He's coming back for the Batmobile. Why doesn't somebody just...
And you know what? I know that they've tried to explain it in various ways, but every single explanation for how nobody tracks that this is Bruce Wayne gathering all this technology, like the Batmobile and stuff like that, every single time I go, that's not possible. Come on now.
But it's cool. We wouldn't want to change this.
We wouldn't want to change it. That's not the point. The point is that we just accept it. And I guess that's... Or here's one for me, another one for me. The Hulk, okay? Okay, so he's Bruce Banner. Got his little purple pants there. Bam! Hulk. Big shredded pants there. Big shredded pants around. He's five times bigger, and his pants have shredded a little bit. And, you know, they're up to his knees now. And then he gets small again, and the pants shrank with him. They are still tight-fitting right around his waist. They haven't stretched out to the point where they're falling down. That one is stupid.
How about unstable molecules?
Oh, God.
I was totally going to bring those up because it's one of those cases where how do you explain that to the non-comic fan?
You know what? If that's what Bruce Banner's pants were made out of, I could almost accept it. Because the first time I went, I thought Human Torch. I'm reading an issue of Fantastic Four. I'm thinking Human Torch. He turns back. I'm like, oh, his costume didn't. And somebody says unstable molecules. I just immediately went, oh, that explains it. No other explanation needed. I went, oh, I got it. No problem.
I love that unstable molecules are more believable to us than magic. If you had said, why don't his clothes burn? Magic. Oh, that's ridiculous.
That's stupid.
No, it's unstable molecules. Oh, well, that makes perfect.
That's science, right?
And
there.
Who makes these clothes? I mean, Reed Richards can't be supplying the entire Marvel Universe with unstable molecules.
Yeah, I've never once seen Reed Richards with unstable molecules in front of a sewing machine. Who's designing that and putting that together?
That's a good question. Is there an unstable molecule specific sewing machine?
There's got to be, doesn't there?
Like perhaps unstable thread? That'd be awesome right there.
How do you cut unstable molecules? Yeah. You have to make them stable?
You have to use unstable molecule scissors. Duh.
I need Neil deGrasse Tyson to explain this to you.
Even street level guys get the costume.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
I got superpowers today. Next day, a package arrives at the door. You have unstable
seamstress skills come with every superpower.
Well, let's see. From my experience reading comic books, I would say the average comic book superhero is on the street patrolling 29 out of 30 days a month minimum. If you're doing that, I don't care how careful you are, you cannot maintain a secret identity. It is impossible.
I don't know how you can maintain a life because you never sleep. Like Peter Parker never sleeps.
No.
Period.
Well, we all accept how fast these guys heal too. From stuff.
That's when they came up for me was that, I worked in theater for a lot of years. I knew a lot of actors that needed flexible jobs to do theater work. Even given some of those jobs, the amount of flexibility in a superhero's time that they can be on the Avengers and head off for like
how about this the science that apparently we don't know this, but in the DC Marvel universe the average day is 52 hours long. Apparently that's the only way this makes sense. They're not 24-hour days. Superhero universes have longer days, more hours in them. That's it.
Yeah, you totally, because I don't know, if I disappeared from my job for 2 weeks without actually giving anybody a phone call, I don't know how long I'd be able to keep my job.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, other than Spider-Man, how many superheroes actually have jobs?
How do these guys pay their bills? That's a good question. Who's paying, not all of them are rich.
I believe the Avengers pay most of their people.
Actually, I think they do pay their people, yeah.
I think that's the way that they just get around that problem now is they just give people they can get a salary if you're on the Avengers list.
I like that Kyle Rayner was member of the Justice League plus patrolling an entire quadrant of the galaxy, still had time to draw a monthly comic book. Liefeld, on the other hand. Can't get it done sitting on his ass at home if he has 6 months.
I'm trying to imagine poor Ron Lim doing that book and going, I don't know how he finds the effing time to do it. I can only turn in 22 pages a month.
Actually, Ron Lim could turn in a lot more. He was the wrong guy to use as an example.
I'd really like to know, though, if Spider-Man was busy, like really busy swinging across the city, like would buildings just not be just coated in the web fluid?
Well, I know. That web fluid, no, that disappears.
Well, it disappears after an hour, but still.
But that's one that
we all went through a while.
We all went, that's another one, though. We all went, Spider-Man was like, I'm going to tie these up and the web fluid will just dissolve after an hour or so. That's the first time I went that, I went, oh, that explains it. Like, no, look. This stuff is as strong as steel, you know?
I'm trying to imagine that call. So you're a cop. You get the
call.
You
hour.
Pick up these guys that there's no evidence on hand that they've committed any crime.
No.
They're just tied up with a note that says, honest, they did. I hope the judge will
pick. Yeah, no, a note that says, signed your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Oh, I was wondering who it was.
An anonymous tip and a bag of jewels.
I was wondering who it was who had tied these guys up in a web. I didn't realize. Thank God he told me.
The prosecution rate must be awful.
Oh, no, I know.
Well, that explains why we have the same villains month after month.
Yeah, they keep coming back, And I don't get it, because I don't get how those villains always manage to be able to get, like, upgrades. The villains don't seem to work, and they don't seem to successfully pull off any crimes.
I don't know a single villain who's actually ever managed to rob anything and possibly fence it or have the money, and yet they're always getting these better costumes. Somebody explain Mac Gargan to me. Somebody. How is that guy constantly getting a better uniform or better costume?
He usually has a benefactor.
Oh.
Yeah. Benefactor's pretty much the only way.
That's one of the laziest Deus Ex Machina things that'll get you out. Like, the Avengers pay a salary. Norman Osborn has bottomless pits of money, and he'll upgrade villains. That happens constantly.
Yeah.
Lex Luthor used to be the guy for DC that if you wanted to revamp a character, well, Lex Luthor just wanted to cause some havoc, so he gave him a new uniform.
Oh, man. Talk about stupid. Let's really go into the different color of kryptonites here. I mean, come on.
Well, that hasn't existed in a while.
Come on. But we all accepted it when it did.
I miss blue kryptonite.
Which one was blue?
It was the blue one.
Fighting
for it. Aesthetically, you miss it, is what you're saying.
Yes, aesthetically, I miss it, but I believe it just made Superman into human.
Yes, there was one that, like, just took away his powers. Okay, there's green that kills. Red is the one that just takes away his powers.
Red's a roll of the dice.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, that's logical.
The one that, like, it gave him, like,
gold. Gold.
Head or,
yeah. Gold permanently removes powers. Blue, that's the bizarro analog to green. White kills all plant life, Kryptonian or not. Jewel, oh my god, I didn't realize there's so many. Jewel amplifies the psychic powers of Phantom Zone residents. Well, you know what, that one I buy.
I think if you've already bought the Phantom Zone, you might, might as well take everything to go.
Silver, I can't even tell. Causes Clark to have paranoid delusions. Black, oh man, which first appeared in Smallville, thank you, gives a kryptonite the ability to split the personality of Kryptonians. So I guess they wanted to do a mirror-mirror type episode. Orange gives super animal powers to stronger than Kryptos for precisely 24 hours to any animal that touches it, ineffective on humans. So if I had a cat and I wanted to give it exactly 24 hours worth of superhuman abilities, I would touch it to orange kryptonite. Me, I'm fine. Like, that is anti-kryptonite, has no power, but has the same effects as kryptonite on humans. X, which is, by the way, it says, according to Wikipedia, not to be confused with Kryptonite X. There's X Kryptonite. Not to be confused with Kryptonite X. I don't even know. Gives Earth-based Kryptonians powers. There's about 47,000 more of these. I'm not going to go through them.
Please don't. Yeah.
I think we only had, like, three from Crisis on.
wait. Pink Kryptonite. This one I am going to say. From Supergirl Volume 4, Number 79, Alternate Earth 1 Timeline in a 2003 Supergirl storyline by Peter David. This is awesome. It affected the Superman of this reality by giving him gay tendencies. What are
That is pretty awesome.
One of the results of this is Superman giving flattering compliments to Jimmy Olsen about his wardrobe and decorative sense.
I wish to God that this was not 2003. That yeah.
It spoofs the more innocent times.
Let us recall that pre-New 52 that you all pine for.
Oh,
that
that's
so sweet,
so
and innocent.
Awesome.
And,
oh, that is amazing.
All the decapitation.
Anyways, we buy all this. Hey, should we get on to talking about the books of the week? Or do you guys have any more?
You know what? We could probably do 10 shows on this. There's just so much stupid stuff. But let's do some Weave views. We've read some comics this week, so.
Because much like Marvel with Keith, much like Marvel with canceling Fearless Defenders, we are
here. I come to save the day.
Saving you from bad comics.
Brett, why don't you take the helm?
Oh, good lord, good lord! There was so many comics to choose from this week. That I'm not even sure where to start overall.
It's because not a single one of them actually qualifies as a good book.
Oh, that's not true. That is not true.
All right,
there's a good Jack. Book there. Man, Modus doesn't even need to get into the Wii.
I'm fired up this week. I can't just wait
throwing,
to on these
throwing
books.
His opinions.
No, okay, go ahead, Brett. I'll shut up here. I'll try.
All right.
I'm going to go. Well, you know what? The only way this is going to happen, I'm going to go get myself a beverage. You start talking about a book. I'll find out which one it is later.
Yeah, chances are good you'll hate it. So, mm-hmm. All right.
I'll just assume. Just say that I hated it and move on.
Okay. So, anyways, I'm going to start out with Conan and the People of the Black Circle by Fred Van Lente and Ariel Olivetti. I don't know if this is specifically like a series of miniseries, or this is just a miniseries and there is a regular series going on. I'm not 100% sure of that, but one thing's for sure, it's definitely a Conan book. Reads exactly like every other Conan book. I think Mo and I talked about it quickly, and we said, like, you could read a Conan book from the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, and you'd pretty much, it'd be the same damn book pretty much throughout. They talk about a lot of random stuff, and Conan would keep looking virtually exactly the same. Conan looks exactly the same in this, and Ariel Olivetti's art is actually almost too pretty, I think, for Conan, because Conan looks very nice, but honestly, looks like a
professional weightlifter, like a
totally. Is that really the kind of musculature you get by being a barbarian? It looks a lot more like he has to really focus on protein powders and that kind of thing. And I just don't know how much protein
body
powder.
Sculpting there for
yeah, yeah. Like that just doesn't seem right. But really, what stood out for me was the horrific script in this one. It just seemed really awful. Even more awful than I'm used to. So overall, this was a terrible book, and Conan.
All right, well I'll go by Crom. This book by Crom was a really tough read by Crom. Not my favorite one of the week by Crom. I really struggled through it by Crom. The art was, I think, too clean by Crom, and I made one observation as I was reading it by Crom that there are 16 word balloons for Conan, three of which include the phrase by Crom. 20% of his dialogue by Crom.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. This is not a good book. I love Savage Sword of Conan's, but updating it to this modern age, this particular comic I did not enjoy. It is worth noting that Conan only appears on 6 pages in this comic book. The rest is really just other characters talking
and
about stuff we don't care about.
Not the first 6 pages either.
No. He doesn't appear to like page 12.
Actually, I don't even think he appears on the last page. So yeah, it's...
No. I went through and counted. He actually appears earlier than I thought he did, but. There are several pages after he first appears that he is not included in. No, I don't enjoy it. And I was thinking about, other than Kurt Busiek, I don't think I've ever enjoyed a Conan story that was printed in color. I think Conan works better in black and white. And maybe it's just what Keith said. The art is just way too pretty for Conan. This is a fail. I will not be picking up another issue of Conan and the Circle of Black People or Black Circle of People. Or... What the hell is the book called?
Conan and Some of My Best Friends Are Black.
Conan and the people of the Black Circle, not the Black Circle people.
We're going to need a vote on Twitter of your favorite Chris screw up of the week. Oh, I didn't read this because I actually thought this was a part of a like a new miniseries of continuing continuity like they're doing with Deadpool. You're saying it isn't?
I have no idea. It may be.
I believe it's just the latest in the latest miniseries.
Yeah, well, that I did not. It sounds to me like you guys wish that the Stan Lee media could get a hold of Conan, though.
Might as well.
He
wouldn't produce anything.
I think we vote to take a pass on the next Conan thing that comes up.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought we were this week. Actually, I'd mentioned.
We'll put it with the Hellboys and the Mignolaverse books.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. Exactly. All right, Brett. Go ahead with another book then.
All right. Well, let's jump onto one of those sold out first print books, Pretty Deadly by Kelly Sue DeConnick and Emma Rios did the art.
Yeah.
Yep. So firstly, this is a Western book. I have very little interest in Western books to start out. Secondly, I was very confused throughout most of the book. So thirdly, I'm sure that there are people I guarantee simply by due to the fact that Kelly Sue DeConnick wrote it that there will absolutely be people out there who love it no matter what. I am not one of those people. I do not love this book at all, and have no interest in ever reading it again.
Keith?
Well, I thought it was just okay. I think the art was a bit overworked at times. It was kind of hard to... It was a couple of pages, particularly when they introduced the girl with the crow in her head, for lack of a better term.
Wasn't that a vulture?
Is it a vulture?
I think it's a vulture, but
Blackbird vulture, but okay. Yeah, the girl in the vulture cloak. I couldn't entirely figure out what was happening in all those panels. It's a bit supernaturally for me. It would have been a good Vertigo book back in the day. There's no penises in it, which is quite that's a jump for an Image book. It has a scene that even could have one.
And totally.
So that's
this book did not meet the Image quota of penises is Keith's review. Best thing you can say about it. That is amazing.
There's a lot of text at the end that I did not read. So if anyone read that, they can
I think that's her describing how she came up with the concept of the book and stuff, isn't it? Mm. I don't know.
I won't be using it.
Yeah. Chris?
It wouldn't matter to me one way or the other.
Yeah, this is just a pretentious, bad version of East of West.
And East of West is pretentious as hell.
Yes, but it's not bad. It's just pretentious.
And this is even more pretentious, though.
Oh, yes, completely. A waste of time. But we need to invite somebody on who likes Kelly Sue DeCarmick's writing. Because I think as a podcast we fail because she has fans. Yet I don't think of any of them are on this panel.
I wouldn't say I'm a fan of her work in general, but I do like Captain Marvel.
You mildly tolerate her then. Okay.
Yeah, I don't wish her specific harm.
Don't buy this book. It's crap.
Oh, this book is way worse than that, Chris. Come on now. I mean, Brett said it right. There's people who are going to love this book because it's cool to love. What is her name? Kelly Sue DeConnick? DeConnick.
Mrs. Matt Fraction.
It's cool to love Mrs. Fraction.
That's not bad. I think you can like her or not like her. It has nothing to do with who she is partnered with.
Bullshit.
Okay.
He just called her Mrs. Matt Fraction. It wasn't the.
But no, seriously. Yes, the fact that Matt Fraction, everybody loves him, and it's cool to love him, and that is part of it. I mean, sure, that influences.
I don't buy it.
I do.
I do not buy that.
I do. But also,
that's completely unfair. I think people would have said that about Louise Simonson 30 years ago. It was as unfair then as it is now.
Yeah.
She is a writer in her own right. She's very successful. You can like her or not like her on the basis of her own work.
Okay, you can. But they don't is the point. They can, but they don't. They like her because it's cool to like her. And part of that is because she's Mrs. Math Fraction. And you know what? This book sucks donkey butt. Honest to God, this is... Here's some of the dialogue of this book. When everybody talks about what a talented writer this is. Hold on. Dang. Sissy? Show yourselves. You stupid son of a... Show yourself. To a blind man? I'm a gonna... Dumb dog. Ah!
A lot of complete sentences in there, isn't it?
No, exactly.
That was actually one of the parts that I didn't understand what was going on. So that's
no. It's really just awful.
It actually made more sense without the pictures.
Do a whole issue without verbs.
But that's it though. I mean, this is really bad. I mean, again, it gets down to another scene here. A guy gets shot, and he goes, his response to getting shot is, you didn't have to. You didn't have to. Jesus. And then he drops an F-bomb. He goes, I got it. I swear. I swear. I hate it when they do that. I don't know people that stutter. Unless you're not stuttering because you can't think. If you stutter, you don't just say the first letter 47,000 times, five times in a row. Where is it? My vest, pocket. It's awful. This is a bad book, badly written. And you know what? The thing is, it's got some cool concepts. So what we need here is for Mrs. DeCormick, whatever. We need her to go back and she takes a look at some of the books from the past. And instead, she's trying to do a modern thing. But unfortunately, she falls into the trap of money of the modern storytelling and losing the narrative. So go back, study books in the past, learn how they told a narrative, and then take those and try and apply a modern take to it. That's what she needs to do. This isn't it. Fighting mood. I'm in a fighting mood. Brett, what do we got?
All right. Well, Samurai Jack by Jim Zub, who is of course a Canadian treasure.
He actually changed his name to Zub from what was it? Zubavivitz?
It's his professional name. It's his professional. Yeah.
He's no longer Zubavivitz.
I believe he uses both.
Okay. Just checking.
You know, I mean, he had to be. He has to go with something. And Andy Suriano.
I have an easier time pronouncing Jim Zub than Jim Zubavivitz.
And I'm just as glad that if you stick with Jim Zub overall, but
you're welcome.
But yeah, so I like the animated series a lot, as I think that there's a lot of people here that do. It's nice that this is carrying on as a new season of the animated series. I think that the art's really good and fits the series well. I thought that the script was really good and fit the series well. I had a lot of fun with the series. And enjoyed it greatly, and we'll definitely be back.
I never watched the series. It held my interest for about half of the issue, and then I just felt myself drifting away. So it wasn't for me. I thought it was decently made. It was just not aimed for... I wasn't the target audience of this book. I think it was pretty good quality. I won't be continuing just because I have no connection to the character. Chris?
I love this book. I had so much fun with it. It has callbacks to the original series, yet I think is fairly inclusive, although I understand Keith's criticisms. And although I am not a huge fan of multiple covers, this has a bunch and they all rock. I spent more time with the covers than I did the comic book, and I don't mean that as a criticism. This was a fun book. I'm definitely back next month.
Well, there's so many variant covers here. I mean, it does take away from the content of the actual book, which isn't that much, to be quite honest. It's my all-time favorite cartoon. I mean, I wish you'd watch it, Keith. It's my all-time favorite cartoon. It's so good. And one of the things that makes it so good is that it reinvents itself with every episode. One episode might be a throwback to something from Frank Miller. Then you might have something that's more a throwback to an 80s cartoon, or Saturday morning cartoon, then you might have something as a throwback to more of a manga or anime style. And every episode reinvents itself. So it's really difficult, actually, I think, to judge this book based on just this one thing, because we have to see if it manages to do that, manages to reinvent itself, paying homage but still maintaining its own personality issue after issue after issue, much like the cartoon series.
I think it might be story arc after story arc.
Perhaps, yeah. This is not as good as the series. It's difficult to do some of the cool things they did with animation in a comic book, but it's like 60 to 70% of what I think is the best cartoon ever made, so that means it's really good.
All right. Well, I guess we'll move on to Velvet then, the new Ed Brubaker and Steve Epting book. This is Ed Brubaker doing what Ed Brubaker does all the time. And this is Steve Epting doing his best to look like Sean Phillips did the art. So really, I mean, it's kind of like an Ed Brubaker book, which is to say that it's fine, and I'll consider reading it at some point, but I'm not. It doesn't excite me like you know, Ed Brubaker normally would.
Well, I got about 3 pages into this book and thought, I was wondering why Marvel was not producing a S.H.I.E.L.D. book right now with the TV show on, and here it finally is. I'm going to be snarky about it and call it Book of the Week at the same time.
Yeah, but look at the competition. Quality wise,
not the toughest competition this week. I thought it was really enjoyable. I was intrigued by the character that they've introduced. It's a Velvet Temptation, isn't it? It's Velvet Templeton. I misread it the first time I was going to Velvet Templeton. I was intrigued by the character. I'll be curious where they go with this. I don't know how long, whether this is an ongoing or whether this is Men as a Finite series. I don't know. It does feel like a leftover S.H.I.E.L.D. book. It feels exactly like coming out of what Brubaker had been doing with Cap and Winter Soldier, and that he kind of just retasked Black Widow for this book. But it's enjoyable. I like it.
Chris?
Oh, wow. I'm surprised to hear these reviews. I didn't go with the S.H.I.E.L.D. thing at all, although I see the similarities. I saw this as a poor man's James Bond. It's all right. I think it's just sort of aping James Bond. And if the series finds feet of its own later on, I could definitely be back in. But it reads to me like a movie adaptation, and they didn't have the license. I didn't enjoy this first issue. I'm marking it down. If it lasts, if it is indeed ongoing, to check back in, but I'm not reading it a second issue as it stands right now. It just sort of read as a movie parody, which is sad because I love Brubaker stuff, but this one didn't do it for me.
I'm sorry, guys. I tried to read it again while you guys were giving your reviews and fell asleep again. This is the most boring book you can possibly imagine. This book is you know what, Epting's art is really nice. Say what you are, Will Brett, about trying to imitate somebody else. So is it Philip Chan? Is that who you said?
No, Sean Phillips.
Sean Phillips. Okay, Sean Phillips. But nevertheless, it's beautiful art. I'll give.
I think it's more the inking than Steve Epting overall.
Maybe. But it was a really nice looking book, and Brubaker's good. Kid's real good. That said, this is just really boring work. You have 22 pages, probably 19 of it are just packed full of inner monologue. Just, I get the points. Just, you never have any characterization of anybody else or anything else in this book because it's just this one person talking so much. It's a really poor, once again, this is an example of modern day writing done really lazy. This is a real disappointment to me.
Alrighty, well, I guess we might as well finish off the week with Zombie War. Zombie War by Kevin Eastman and Tom Skoulan, and art by Kevin Eastman and Eric Talbot. And wow, do I ever? What to say about Zombie War? I guess the question is, did he create this before the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
No,
because man, oh man, he looks like he drew it when he was about 8, and it seems like he wrote it when he was about 16. So it's really, really god awful, is what it is. It's a mess, and the art's awful. It looks like a really, really horrible independent comic book that somebody might pick up and be like, oh, how nice, and then throw it away the next chance they had. And the script isn't a whole lot better. There's nothing good here. Nothing to see. Move along.
I had a bit of this. I meant to look up before we recorded if this is. There's nothing in the credits that is a reprint.
It is. It was printed before, though very small distribution, okay, as a black and white book only. This is the first time it's being reprinted. I think that was from 1992. First time it's being reprinted in color from IDW. Is it IDW here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does feel incredibly dated.
Incredibly, yeah.
There's one point that really jumped out for me was an address from the president where he mentioned 1,000 points of light, which was George Bush Sr.'s catchphrase 30 years ago.
Well, and then he jumped into a George Bush, you know, like George W. Bush thing afterwards, didn't he? Or was that another senior one? But
yes. It's 1992, so it had to be a senior one.
It'd have to be senior. I mean, and there's some basic editing stuff actually. Like there's one of the pages there's a phrase, sightings throughout the southern states, 7 in Virginia alone, and then 2 pages later, there have been sightings of aliens all over the world, hundreds of sightings in the U.S. alone, like exactly the same phrase 2 pages later.
Wow.
Wow. It's
I think
really,
at that point I was skimming it so much I didn't catch that.
Well, and there was even a moment where they're talking like they're listing places on Earth, and it's just like, oh, it's Paris, and it's another city, and then it starts into Russia, and it goes from city, and then country, and you're like, that doesn't really work either.
I wonder if this is just a property that fell into IDW's lap, because doesn't Kevin Eastman own Mirage Studios and they publish stuff periodically? No,
no. Eastman was right on board with getting this published and out through IDW, and I was very happy for it to see print, especially in color, and was hands on at seeing the colorization done.
That is a strange one that now that you mentioned it. Paris, Tokyo, Russia, United Kingdom, China, United States of America.
I know it makes no sense whatsoever. Like they don't like.
There are also no buildings that close to the Eiffel Tower, but you know, he didn't have the internet to actually look up photos of the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
And Lord knows they didn't have encyclopedias back then.
That's right.
Ooh, this was obviously done before cameras and stuff. So.
Pre-camera. Right.
I don't think any of us like. Let's move on.
No, well, I wish it was done pre-paper. Because here's the thing. I mean, like I say, this is a reprint of this old book. And Kevin Eastman, hey, man, he created TMNT. And he married, you know, former Penthouse Pet of the Year and B or C movie seductress Linda Strain. I mean, he's a god in the comic book community, geek community to many people. What's that?
Julie Strain.
What did I say? Linda Strain? My mistake. Julie Strain.
You said Linda Strain. Don't massacre my future wife's.
Julie Strain when she finds when she's had enough of his money.
For her.
Oh,
I don't think it's fair to refer to him as Mr. Julie Strain. This book can be good or not good on its own merit.
Look, I mean, I can't tell you how many videos I rented because she was on the box cover going, this is going to suck, but I'm watching it anyways because she's got to be nude through most of it. I love that. Anyways, where was I talking about? Oh, yes, book I didn't.
The Bear Witch Project. Let's review that next podcast.
Oh, I love it. No, this book is not not. IDW should have at some point said, yeah, so it's really nice that you want this out there in color and everything. But we expect a certain level of quality, and this doesn't match it. And the only thing keeping this from not knocking off Todd Ugliest Kid on Worst for worst book we've reviewed yet this year is the fact that it's not as offensive.
I don't think the coloring helped.
No.
No, it didn't.
It actually hurt the book in many places.
This is like Brett said, it's done by an 8-year-old, but seriously, I swear to God, when I've seen kids who are like 13 years old in grade 8, grade 7, they want to break into the comic book industry, but they don't have any skill yet, and they're just trying, and they're just working their way through, and eventually they usually do, and this is where they start, and this is the look and the style and the dialogue of a 13-year-old trying his best, but without any skill or experience yet. But unfortunately, it was done when he had already made millions from TMNT. All right. I got nothing else to say. We're Comics We Talk Podcast. I'm Mo, Mo_WeTalk on Twitter. And, favorite Chris moment of the week. That's what I want to hear. Other than that, I'm personally OUT. Guys?
Chris_WeTalk. That's it. I'm not doing anymore.
I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter. I was at a comic sale last weekend and picked up a big pile of New Universe comics for 25 cents each, having some fun digging through those long boxes. My hands were filthy from the mostly 80s and 90s comics. I did enjoy several of the comics when I unbagged them. Had the old Tramps brown backing boards that I put in all those bags 20 years ago. they do not damage your comics, as it turns out. But that was fun. I found a big stack of them for a quarter each.
Brett, all right. I am Brett_WeTalk on Twitter. And this week, I got nothing. So let's just continue to go OUT.